Good evening, Earthlings. It's good to see you all. I hope you had a good day of practice, and I saw many of you when I was out for my evening walk, so I hope that you enjoyed this very beautiful evening, warm spring evening. Tonight I want to talk about the second foundation of mindfulness. This is called mindfulness of Vedana, or the English word is mindfulness of feeling tone. And the fact that the Buddha devoted a whole separate foundation to this particular exploration really shows how important Vedana is, how important he considered it to be. And it actually turns out that Vedana plays a crucial role in understanding suffering and the end of suffering. So when we can really understand the role of Vedana, we can understand how we get entangled in suffering, and also it's a gateway into a here and now release of suffering. So there's a long-term release of suffering, but there's also the potential of a here and now release of suffering. And this is what we can get to understand by exploring Vedana. So Vedana can best be described as the hedonic quality of all of our experiences, ranging from very, very pleasant to somewhere in between, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, often called neutral, to very, very unpleasant. So there's a whole range of a feeling tone. When we call it feeling tone, we often confuse it with emotions. It can take a little bit of time to get our head around that feeling tone is not the same as emotions like anger, fear, sadness. All emotions have feeling tone associated with them. So an emotion like sadness, for example, often has an unpleasant feeling tone connected with it. Or happiness may have pleasant feeling tone connected with it. But Vedana itself is much more fundamental than emotions. Emotions are much more complex than Vedana. So one could describe Vedana as the particular taste of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral that accompanies every single moment of our lives. Every single wakeful moment, there is one of these qualities present. So as you sit here today, this evening, in your chair, on the floor, after a long day of silent practice or other things you've been up to today, in this moment, perhaps you feel a pleasant relaxation in the body. That's one possibility. Or maybe there's some unpleasant sense of pressure or heat in your body. Or maybe the body feels quite neutral as you tune into it right now. So just in this moment, checking out for yourself, what's the predominant feeling tone within the body right now? As we track Vedana connected with body sensations, it can be really difficult for us to really grasp that Vedana is actually a quality of mind, meaning that the particular feeling tone that we experience is not inherent in the object that we perceive. it's an aspect of mind, and it's a subjective taste of the experience. So for example, for many of us, when we smell lunch, there might be the arising of pleasant Vedana, but that pleasant Vedana is actually not in the lunch itself. Or when someone is breathing deeply in the hall, and there might be unpleasantness arising with hearing someone breathing deeply in the hall, that unpleasantness that you feel is not located in the other yogi. It's an aspect of your own mind. The Buddha taught that the particular feeling tone that we experience at any given moment is a coming together of different phenomena. So it's a coming together of an object, like a smell, and then one of the six sense doors. So for example, the nose door. So there's a scent and the nose door coming together, and that gives rise to a moment of nose door consciousness, and that is associated with a particular feeling tone. So there is Vedana arising in the contact between the nose door and sense, between the ear door and sounds, between the eye door and sight, between the tongue door and taste, and between the body door and body sensations. It's that coming together that gives rise to feeling tones at any of these sense doors. And there's also Vedana arising when the mind door meets mind objects. For example, a thought, a memory, a plan, or an emotion gives rise to different feeling tones. So some of us like to think a lot. We like to analyze, reflect on, understand. We just like to use our mind a lot, and there might be some pleasantness involved with that, a sense of delight with a lot of thinking. Other people may be more emotionally oriented, so they may feel a pleasantness with having big emotions. So these are all mind or phenomena. So whether the coming together of the scent of the lunch and the nose door, in that meeting of a scent of the lunch and the nose door, gives rise to pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, all depends on previous conditions leading up to that particular moment of the coming together. So all our previous interactions with food, that particular food, that particular scent, is going to influence whether in that moment there's an experience of pleasant or neutrality. Or the particular condition of your mind in that moment as you walk into the dining hall. You can probably all recognize this, that the same lunch at different times may be pleasant to you or may not be smell pleasant to you. One of the reasons why I'm giving this a lot of attention is that this is important, because this is where we get in trouble with Vedana, It's that we assume that whatever feeling tone we have, that that is in the object. We're not recognizing that that experience is in our own minds. We automatically assume that it's in the object itself. So if you think about times when we've been infatuated with someone, it's been a long time for me. I love my partner, but it's been a long time. I had a crush on him. But I do remember the intense pleasantness of seeing him, thinking about him, connecting with him, and the automatic assumption that that pleasantness was in him. Have any of you had that experience ever in your life? I imagine we all have, to some extent. And so we feel all this pleasantness at all the different sense doors, at the mind door, at the ear door, at the eye door, at the nose door, and we make the automatic assumption that that person must be the perfect person. All that pleasantness is in them. And what happens over time, there's more neutrality. The pleasantness is shifting now to neutrality, or sometimes even to unpleasant. And we still assume that it's because the other person has changed. I imagine I'm not the only one that's made that assumption. So the feeling tones we experience and our habitual reactions to feeling tones often seem to be one and the same. When we experience a feeling tone arising at any of the six sense doors, most often there's an immediate reactivity that arises with that feeling tone. And we don't see that it's actually two separate events. So with unpleasant, there's often an immediate sense of not liking, of aversion. Immediately, unpleasant, I don't like this, I don't want this. With pleasant, there's often an immediate liking, craving, I want this, this is good, I like it. And with neutrality, there's often an immediate disinterest, tuning out. This doesn't seem like anything I have to bother with. So these are reactions to feeling tones, and because we can't see that they're separate, then we glom them together. And this initial reactivity to feeling tone with liking, disliking, or tuning out often sparks further reactive patterns in the mind. So for example, there is unpleasant sound being known at the ear door in the meditation hall. And now we start feeling irritated. Where is that sound coming from? Who is making that sound? And again, we believe that the source of unpleasantness is somehow out there in the sound or whoever is making the sound. And then we may start having a long, agitated inner dialogue. How this is disturbing our practice. I can't practice when there's so many sounds. Who made the kitchen happen right next to the meditation hall? That's not a good practice condition. And then at some point, we become aware of our own reactivity, and now we're like, I'm a bad meditator. Obviously, I'm totally lost here on a tangent. I'm upset. I'm agitated. I'll never be good at this. I'm a hopeless meditator. And this is the big story of papancha, or proliferation of thought, that the Buddha taught us about, which is this tendency to proliferate and get further and further away from what was our original focus of attention. Is this familiar to anyone? Just checking. I imagine that we all know this. So what's interesting with neutral feeling tone is that the response is often one of tuning out. And sometimes this can be known as boredom. We feel bored, we feel disinterested, the mind is floaty or disengaged. And an interesting phenomena is sometimes when we sit there and we're a little bit bored and a little bit disinterested, we end up stirring up some kind of drama. Have you ever noticed this? That then you get a little snippet of some life story and it fires you up, and now you're all agitated and thinking about something. And the funny thing is that there is an unpleasantness maybe in this drama, but in comparison to the boredom we feel with the neutrality, sometimes it feels unpleasant that we come out of this more neutral place and into some kind of drama. There's an odd pleasantness that can be involved with having some kind of dramatic story. The reactive patterns to feeling tones are very deep and very habitual. And as fellow human beings, we all share these patterns. And we share them with animals too. It's almost part of having a nervous system. When we look at animals in nature, we can see how quickly, when there's unpleasant, how quickly they react to that. In a well-known sutta called the Dart Sutta, the Buddha clearly talks about these reactive patterns and how they are causing our shared suffering, our shared dukkha. So I'm going to read a little bit from this sutta. He says, when touched with painful vedana, an ordinary person, sometimes us, experience sorrow, grief, lamentation, beat their chest and become distraught. So they feel two pains, a physical and a mental pain. Just as if a person was shot with an arrow and right afterward they were shot with another one, so they would feel the pain of two arrows. In the same way, when touched with painful vedana, an ordinary person grieves, lament, beat their chest and become distraught, so they feel two pains, physical and mental. So this is a very well-known teaching about the first and second arrow that some of you may be familiar with already. And we can think about the first arrow as the unavoidable pain level of our existence. So having these fragile human bodies, that age, they get sick, they ache when we sit down too long. We have these fragile human minds, fragile human hearts. We grow sick, we age, we die. We lose the ones we love. This gives rise to unpleasant Vedana. And this is the first dart, the unavoidable pain connected with being embodied. The Buddha had a stomach ache in the very last part of his life. He still had, even with his awakened mind, he still endured this first dart because of this embodiment. This will not go away. But there's also this suffering level, the second dart, that's this reactivity to feeling tone. And the second dart is what is optional. This is where there can be this release of suffering. Long term, with awakening, but also right here in the here and now, there is a potential of a release of suffering if we can if there can be the possibility of the second dart not being shot. Now the Buddha in this sutta only talks about two darts. But what about the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, and the eighth dart, or more, that we probably all know? So very rarely do we just get to the second dart. Because of this papancha, this proliferation, often there are many, 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 many darts. So, unpleasant sound, first arrow, aversion and wanting to get rid of it, second arrow, leading to irritated inner dialogue, third arrow, leading to many thoughts about how we want to avoid the noise in the future, fourth arrow, leading to self-judgments for being a bad meditator, fifth arrow, leading to hopelessness and despair about our practice, sixth arrow. So often we get very entangled in these suffering states, and we don't see that this whole entanglement, what did it start with? The arising of unpleasant Vedana at the ear door. This is interesting. So it's really clear in the sutta that suffering arises with the shooting of the additional arrows. And it's also really clear that the Buddha pointed to that it's freedom is not about just having pleasant Vedana or getting rid of unpleasant Vedana. It's about changing our relationship with Vedana, learning to recognize Vedana, learning to be curious about them, learning to breathe with them. So for example, with the arising of unpleasant Vedana, learning to see, okay, here's unpleasant Vedana, can I breathe with this? Let it move through, not adding additional layers of suffering. So we can bring in this quality of investigation, asking ourselves, is this experience unpleasant? Is it neutral? How do I actually know this particular feeling tone? At what sense door is this feeling tone arising? Is it with a sight I'm seeing? Is it with a sound I'm hearing? Is it with a thought I'm having? So we can ask all of these curious questions when there are feeling tones. Well, there's always feeling tones, but we can ask them, especially when we're entangled, to get to that feeling tone level to release some of that reactivity. The body door is a really great place for us to get to know feeling tones. As we work with the breath and the body, as we bring mindfulness to breath and body, we can begin to notice all of the associated feeling tones that are arising with the experience of breath and body. And we can see for ourselves that these feeling tones arise, come to a peak, and they pass away. They're not permanent. And we can see that, for example, a pulsing in the hands, you know, may shift into warmth, pressure in the thighs may shift into lightness, softness at the shoulders may shift into coolness, and that there might be associated feeling tones with those changing sensations that are also shifting and changing. So probably many of you have had the experience of something that was pleasant in the body, that shifted, became neutral, and turned into unpleasant. The same sensation may be associated with a different feeling tone. So what's really helpful to remember is that we can become aware of Vedana no matter how many darts that are being shot. At any point when we notice that we're in a reactive place, that is a perfect time for us to ask, what is the feeling tone level right here? So if we get to the level of I'm a hopeless meditator, at that point we can say, I wonder what is the feeling tone with this thought at the mind door, I'm a hopeless meditator. Oh, it's unpleasant. Interesting. Can I just rest with the experience of unpleasant right here, right now? And that is a stepping out of further arrows being shot. Sometimes when we start to see the patterns of Vedana and reactivity, we get into trying to manage our meditation of lining up the perfect sit. I had that for breakfast, then I went for a walk, then I had a rest, and then I encouraged my mind, and then I went and sat, and then I had the great sit. So I don't know if any of you have ever had that experience of trying to line up a perfect sit, trying to figure out what was all the conditions that led to my perfect sit. It can be helpful for us to remember that by the time unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral Vedana arise in the mind, the cause for that arising is already in the past. So if there's a fatigue in this moment, it may be caused by poor sleep last night. So the causes and condition for fatigue in this moment is already in the past. And as you know, we cannot go back and change those causes and conditions. Or unpleasant tension and pressure in this moment may be caused by too much straining earlier today. So the causes and conditions for that are in the past. So once there is the knowing of Vedana, there is nothing we can do to change that arising, because the causes and conditions are in the past. So all we can do with Vedana, let's say very unpleasant Vedana, is to be really mindful of it. Knowing it with mindfulness. And we can see that, like anything else in our experience, it is impermanent. It arises and it passes out of its own causes and conditions. Some of them known to us and some of them unknown to us. And it doesn't really help us trying to figure out why a particular feeling tone is here. It's much more helpful for us to just ride it, be present with it, experience it fully with mindfulness. That's really the way to practice with feeling tone. The Buddha made a distinction between what he called worldly and unworldly Vedana. In this talk, until now, we've mostly focused on worldly Vedana, which often triggers these patterns of craving, aversion, boredom. And so they're not considered forward leading. The unworldly Vedana are those that are associated with our path. So for example, the pleasant Vedana associated with the bliss of blamelessness. We talked about that one of the first nights. When there's this engagement in sila, in moral, ethical behavior, it could give rise to a joy. And this bliss of blamelessness is unworldly pleasant Vedana, because it's associated with our path. Or pleasant feelings associated with deepening concentration or metta practice, those are also considered unworldly pleasant Vedana. So these types of Vedana are said to be forward-leading, and it's because they arise out of a letting go of sensual pleasure, of a letting go of sensual desire. They really arise from a letting go. They're associated with wholesome wish for deeper happiness, deeper peace, and deeper freedom. So like we talked about, knowing this bliss of blamelessness and enjoying this bliss of blamelessness, it's because it really supports a further letting go into this path. The Buddha really encouraged us to notice when there is this joy or this well-being that arises from the practice itself. And being mindful of unworldly pleasant Vedana is actually self-corrective. It doesn't really lead to craving, because it arises out of a letting go. So you've all had some experience with well-being in meditation. There's a letting go that has to happen for that well-being to arise. A letting go of striving, a letting go of trying to get somewhere, a letting go of trying to attain something. that meditative well-being really arises from that letting go. And it disappears when we get greedy, right? When we want more of it, or we want another good sit. We want more concentration. That actually leads to that pleasantness vanishing. So in that way, it's self-corrective. There can, strangely enough, also be unworldly, unpleasant vedana associated with this path. So the sting of remorse we may feel, the unpleasantness we feel about remorse or breaking sila, that's a type of unworldly, unpleasant vedana that is forward leading. That sting tells us, oh, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't lead me forward. Or sometimes the calling of sambhega, that really deep wish for freedom. It can be so intense that it can have an unpleasant quality to it. But it's still a forward leading. It still propels us on this path. And at times when we see into the dukkha nature of existence through deep insight practice, there's a stage in the insight process that's called the dukkha insights, where there can be a lot of unpleasantness, but that unpleasantness actually leads to a deep, deep letting go. So again, it's a forward-leading type of unpleasantness. We have to feel that dukkha and feel very disenchanted, and that can be very unpleasant. We see the dukkha nature in experience, and that leads to a deep disenchantment and a deep letting go. And then there's also neutral unworldly vedana. So deep equanimity is associated with unworldly neutral feeling tone at the mind door. In the release of reactivity, the mind no longer is in a push-pull for against experiences, and it rests in the middle. It comes into a place of resting in the middle. And this peaceful state of neutrality that can arise in our practice points to the potential of the liberated mind. And so when we learn to appreciate these temporary experiences of resting in the middle, they can become a new reference point for us. Even a little touching into it, which I know you've all had. I'm not talking right now about long stretches, but just that little time when you come into more of a balance and you feel a peacefulness of that balance, that is a reference point and a lamppost for what freedom might taste like. And so it's forward leading. One image that can illustrate mindfulness of vedana is the image of learning how to serve. And I used that same image the other night. And obviously, there must be some liking of it since I'm bringing it up one more time. And I have actually never served. But when I look at someone who's surfing the waves, like surfing out in the ocean, I feel like I have a felt sense of what that might feel like. So I hope that you can imagine that alongside with me. So what I'm imagining is that when we learn to surf out in the ocean, we have to stay really intimately connected to the board, We have to be very embodied and stay really connected to the board as it's constantly shifting and changing, the water shifting and changing. And for us not to lose our balance, there has to be this deep, moment-to-moment presence with the board. So maybe being mindful with Vedana, with the shifting, changing, arising and passing quality of Vedana, can be like surfing our experience with mindfulness. As all of these Vedanas are moving through, they are like waves in the ocean, and with our mindfulness, can we imagine that we can surf them coming and going? Oh, a wave of pleasant, oh, a wave of neutrality, oh, a wave of unpleasant, that we can learn to stay really on that track, surfing the Vedana. And so, it's not a dry or distant knowing of our experience. It's a deeply intimate knowing of the felt experience of Vedana from moment to moment to moment. Being fully in it and knowing it at the same time. What happens in life is that we often have a distance to our intimacy with our moment-to-moment experience. So we see a beautiful flower outside or some kind of beautiful sight, and now right away we start searching for more flowers. There's that hit of pleasantness, and now we want more, and we start looking for more flowers that can prolong this experience of pleasantness. And then we miss the moment that we're actually in. The wanting of the flowers, more flowers, becomes a barrier between our direct being in life and the sense of an I needing something else than what's actually here. The wanting, the aversion, the tuning out creates this distance between ourselves and our being in the world. It's this barrier that creates this illusion of an I in here and a world out there. Me here, world there. So what would life be like if we could serve our Vedanas without habitually reacting to them? So seeing a beautiful flower, there might be a wave of pleasantness arising at the eye door, coming to a peak and fading into neutrality. And intimately knowing this wave of Vedana arise and disappear, there might be a direct knowing of the impermanent nature of sense door phenomena. Right? So we see a flower, there's the arising of pleasant Vedana, and because it's in its nature to arise and disappear, it's going to rise and fade away. And that's why we keep looking for more flowers, because we don't want the ending of that pleasant. If you notice, it's often when there's a fading into neutrality that we reach for the next thing. Check this out when you eat. You're tasting something yummy, right? And it's very pleasant as you're chewing, and then at some point, it's a little bit bland. And what do? We reach for the next bite. And it's because we always want that hit of the pleasant. And we can't actually let that experience come to an end. So in the seeing of this arising of pleasant and coming to an end, the heart might release some deep habitual wish for lasting sense door satisfaction. And as there's a deep release of that craving for lasting pleasant sense door experiences, the heart might reopen to life in another way. The heart might open to the deep fragility and deep preciousness of life, opening fully to all that is beautiful here. It's not permanent. It was never meant to be permanent. It's not in its nature to be permanent. But it is quite beautiful. A sunset, a flower, a warm touch, a smile, but not holding on to it or trying to make it solid, letting it fully in and letting it fully go. So it's not about not having beauty or seeing a beautiful flower or beautiful sunset and having a big wave of pleasant that is fully within our practice. It's just that can we let it fully in and let it fully go without trying to hold on to it. So I want to end with a poem by Dana Foltz, and it's called Just For Now. Just for now, without asking how, let yourself sink into stillness. Just for now, lay down the weight you so patiently bear upon your shoulders. Feel the earth receive you, and the infinite expanse of the sky grow even wider as your awareness reaches up to meet it. Just for now, allow a wave of breath to enliven your experience. Breathe out whatever blocks you from the truth. Just for now, be boundless, free, with awakened energy tingling in your hands and feet. Drink in the possibility of being who and what you really are, so fully alive, and the world looks different, newly born and vibrant, just for now. We'll sit in silence for a few moments. Thank you for listening to the Dhamma.